Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I welcome you on this beautiful day of the 27th of July, 2019. Summer. We're right in the midst of it, eh? Well, kind of, sort of. We're going to talk about the soul. I am just getting back from my retreat, and to record this with you is going to be very, very important. And I get questions from time to time about the soul. People assume so many things about the soul. They assume they understand it, that they have one, that they know what it is, how it operates, what we're, and they really don't. And we live a soulless life, which is why we have so many great difficulties. We're going to talk about the soul today, and I want to remind you before I do get into it that your gifts loom very important as we do these radio programs, because we use your tax-deductible gifts to pay for airtime of our radio and our TV programs that we offer on our website at aspire.org. And I hope that you avail yourself of them. Most of you are listening to me because of the generosity and kindness of our sponsors who make all this possible. It is only through their generosity. And I hope that you will become a sponsor and think about it, because it really is a worthy cause. Your donations go not only for airtime of this program and TV, but to allow me to go to hospice and do a lot of, community work. Personal work with people who are ill, who are sick and dying, as well as children who have great difficulties with their health. I'm not going to get into it all. It's sad at times, but it's all there because of you, your donations, your gifts, and what I can bring to the table to their families and to the children themselves. I hope that you will consider being a sponsor. If you go to the website at aspire.org, you will see at the top of the page there on the opening support, if you click on it, a menu will come down and it will say why support Aspire. And it will tell you all about where your donations go, how to become a sponsor, and all of the wonderful goodies you get for being a sponsor. Because they are really wonderful if you're the type of person who seeks to work on themselves. So I am hoping we get some more sponsors. I would not like to see this be the last year of recording radio. The soul. According to the dictionary, the spiritual or immaterial part of a human being or animal regarded as immortal. Really? A person's mortal or emotional nature, or sense of identity, the emotional or intellectual energy or intensity, especially as revealed in a work of art or an artistic performance, the essence or embodiment of a specified quality, the soul of something. Well, all of these things are really nice, but and then you go into things like soul food, soul kiss, soulless, soul mate, soul music, soul searching, soul stirring, all these little definitions that we have applied to the soul. It's like the word God. There are so many definitions of the word God. Before you know it, the meaning of the whole thing is lost. And that's the problem with most of us. The meaning of everything is lost because we use the word so much. We think we know what it means. We're kind of arrogant creatures, kind of. We are arrogant creatures. So we have a great deal of difficulty with understanding anything that would be, shall we say, authentic. So let us go into this. The first question comes from Lyle. He does not tell me where he lives. How do you know that you have a soul? I've been reading some of your stuff, and you seem to understand the soul, but how do you know we even have one? Did you create it? Did religion create it? Lyle, you have a great question here. I admire anyone who questions me or anyone else on any subject as to why we know what we know or what we think we know that we know, whatever that is. So I'm really grateful you did that. Okay, let's look at it. How do I know that we have a soul? I didn't even know when I was in seminary at back at Unity Village that there even was a soul. It was never talked about. It was never dealt with. It was never something that came up. The only thing in the day that I was so to speak, taught, as it were, was about how to give a sermon about how to be rich and wealthy and healthy and happy. That was it. Oh, there was some biblical stuff thrown in there, but that was just about all there was in the day. So I never grew up with the idea of having a soul. Never dawned on me. In the course of my life when I was a child, Lyle, there were many things that I did when I was playing with the kids and all of that that alluded to something inside of me that was immortal. I came in a very odd person. Believe me, I did. And I'm all right with that. I felt something deep inside me that had to be fulfilled. And I'm not sure if I can get this across to you, but it was the immortal part of my soul. I could feel this deep yearning not to go towards the skin, but to go within. And it was always a daunting thing inside of me when I was a kid. And I could never look at people the way other people did. I saw people trapped in their bodies. I saw people speaking absent of their heart. I saw people living absent of their soul, but I didn't know it was a soul. I had no idea what this quote-unquote spiritual or immaterial part of a human being is. I had no idea. I did have a sense of death all around me, and I knew that I was in this body, and it was perpetuated by a cycle of death and birth and death. I knew reincarnation almost from the moment I was born. Nothing else was true to me. Nothing. I mean, there was nothing else. So I would look at the whole thing and I would see and feel things that my playmates didn't see and feel. They always wanted to play these stupid army games and shooting each other. I didn't do it. I would just go home. I had no interest in any of that at all. And as time went on, I, so to speak, got edumacated. I got educated, and that whole soul thing kind of got sidetracked. It got put over to the left or to the right of me inside, but it was still there. Then, when I went back to seminary and I started becoming a student there and going to KU and doing the things I did, I finally realized I had neglected the very reason I went into the ministry. It was my soul. I didn't know how to deal with it, what it was all about. Where I was, you would think, being trained, knew anything about it or wanted to talk about it. So I became kind of a devotee, shall we say, of Zen. I found Zen. I was kind of instructed by one of my teachers back there at Unity to go in this direction. And I went because it was where I was headed anyway, and there was nothing we could do about it. But nonetheless, less than none, I did it. And I found this part of me. It is the part of me that is love. It is the part of me and you. It's in all of us that is immortal. And it seeks not admiration, but it seeks creativity. It seeks compassion. It is compassion. It is what I call the God in all of us. It is the presence of immortality that lives in all of us. And it is a throbbing, living, beautiful kind of presence that does all sorts of lovely things in my life. And I am totally devoted to it. And you have to seek it. You have to find it. You have to realize it. And then once it is attained, it never leaves you. It is the mind of which I work from. It is the way in which I see people and objects and things in this world. It is the presence of something greater, obviously, than my ego and myself. It lives in a very definite place in the heart, and the authentic heart, not the human heart. And it gives expression in many different ways. So sometimes it has to tromp through, or maybe I have to tromp through. Anyway, the ego of the Gregory, it's a thing, you know. And sometimes this immortal soul that lives within me can't get through all the time because the ego, the old Gregory, wants to stand in front of it. But I have learned not to fight that situation at all, but to move around it. And that's what I'm teaching my students, how to move around it. First, they have to realize the presence of it. And then second, they have to learn how to move around it. So it's a huge life endeavor and process, and it's very difficult for them to understand because they try to get it through the mind, through the body, through the ego, through the emotionality. And of course, in doing that, we all miss. So that is how I know about the soul. It isn't a Greg thing. Greg does not know much about the soul. But there is a part of me, huge part, that is the soul and doesn't need to go through Greg or prove anything to Greg's ego that it exists. It sits there like air in the sky, in this room that I'm in as I am doing this in my little cubby in my office, my little recording cubby. So that's how it works. That's how it is. And that's how I know. It wouldn't be anything that a person could relate to if they weren't interested in even considering it. There you are, my friend. Have a good one. Please forgive me. Namaste. Next one comes from Terrence. He writes me often, and I enjoy his emails. He just says in his email to me about the soul and his doubting it. He says, why do I need a soul? Terrence, I'm not saying you need it. I'm saying, in fact, in truth, you are it. And I don't say you need a soul. I don't say, you know, the only thing we seem to need is our misery. And our misery perpetuates our unhappiness, and our unhappiness perpetuates our misery, and it's a vicious circle. But I'm not saying you need it, but I am saying it is present within you. And once you've had a drink or a sip of this beautiful soul that lives within you, you're going to find a great change in your life. You're going to find that you maturate into compassion and love very quickly. You will find that you have a great momentum, as it were, to know forgiveness and to be in forgiveness at all times. You will find you have all this. But most of us simply don't go for that. We don't understand it. We don't get involved in it because we just are so busy acquiescing to our emotionality and our body, making that our identity. And because we make our body and our mind the identity of us, we don't see the substance and the significance of compassion and love. We don't even see the meaning of art, the beauty of it. I saw this wonderful movie, Pavarotti, the other day, and I urge all of you, if you have a chance, to see it. It's a documentary by Ron Howard on the beauty and the soulfulness of Pavarotti. Was he always soulful? No. Did he sing soulfully? Yes. Was there something in the music that brought about his soul? Yes. And that's why it's a valuable piece of Solenoid, in my opinion, because it shows what it is to have both the human and the divine within us, and how we live in the human more than the divine. But that really doesn't matter. What matters is, do you find the divine in you? This divine, as he would sing, would come out of him in spite of his humanity. He allowed his humanity to cooperate as much as it possibly could with this divine. But this divine soul that lives in us all, he had as well. And he actually was experimenting with kindness and love and patience. And I love what he said. Someone asked him, you know, are you confident that your voice will be there when you call on it, you know, when you're going to sing? And he said, no, I'm not. And he said, that's a part of my job. It's a part of my career. He had to trust in the presence of his soul to give him the voice to sing. And I love that. That is, I have had that kind of experience. I'm sure some of you out there have had that kind of experience from time to time. And you wondered, what was that? What was it that allowed me to sing or to do or to make or whatever it was that you were doing, cutting your vegetables? It doesn't really matter. It could be anything, just anything. And all of a sudden you feel this soul. Rumi said that we long for the kiss of the soul upon our human lips. And I agree with him. I think in personal relationships that we have with our lovers, our friends, even anyone we care about, they represent that beauty. We long for that one kiss in our life where the flavor of the soul comes through. This kiss does not always have to be physical. It can be in the gesture of kindness, in the gesture of forgiveness. We long for the soul. You want to know what that yearning is that you maybe still have within you? That yearning for something that you don't know how it can be fulfilled? It is your soul. And the way we find that yearning fulfilled is through, well, working on the presence of the soul, working to bring it up, to achieve it as a conscious reality. I just got off a retreat with my students, and believe me, these retreats that I do are intense, to say the least. We have beautiful meditations that we do, and there's always a kickback for me. My students, they come, they take a little piece of the pie, a little piece of the energy work, and then they bring it into themselves, and their ego and the energetics of the ego kick it out, and there's always repercussions, always repercussions, always, always, always repercussions after a retreat, because my students don't know how to hold their water, even though I've tried to show them how to hold their water. The ego still perpetuates a great deal of power in their life. So they lose it. And I've talked to, you know, a few of them since the retreat, and jeez. How such great wealth, the soul, has made its home in such poverty, the ego, the body, is beyond me. But that is the way it is by design. So why do we need a soul? Well, you all have to figure out if you need one. And if you do, if it's something of interest to you, then whoopee-doo, we got something here. But if you just see no reason for it because you're pragmatic and practical and logical and all those other wonderful traits of the pedestrian mentality, then there's no reason to seek it. Just be another meaningless life lived from birth to death, just trying to survive out of our genetics, DNA. Please forgive me, Terrence. Namaste. And the last question is from Les, and he is always poking me, and I like it. I like it when people do that. He says, "Does a soul guarantee good, Greg?" Les. Everybody's looking for some ticket that will bring them to something good. They want a guarantee for the whole shamil of their life. And I always laugh at these because, yes, Les, you get more good if you have a soul. Les, you live in a dichotomy, as do I. You have an ego, and then you have a soul. Which one do you choose? You know what the ego's about, but you don't know what the soul is. So wouldn't it be more interesting to do the soul than the ego? Wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be more interesting to find out what the soul is or to live soulfully rather than maybe in your less L-E S mind, your biological thinking? I don't know. You have to determine what's valuable to you and what is not, what is important to you. I can't do that. All I can do is be the teacher. And that's all I can do. I can show you the soul. I can show you the essence of it, how it embodies all of us. I can do that in intellectual ways. I can do it through words and all of that stuff. But the soul is a wordless thing. It is not something really that you can understand through the concept of logic and reasoning. So a lot of people who hear that go, well, then what's the use? Well, until you realize what the use of it all is and why it's so important, nothing can really be translated to you. So it's up to you. One of my students said to me recently, Greg, don't give up on me. And I said, well, it's not me that's in question. It's you that's in question. Will you give up? And most people give up on themselves for various reasons because they really don't want to change. They don't want to do anything significant with their life. They just want to go along to get along, just to find out what they can get and how much they can get. And if they can get how much they think they can get and have, then they think that's a very big deal. And anything that improves their life, they think of as, you know, wow, make it easier, more convenient. The soul is not something you do to be convenient. The soul is something you awaken to within your heart. Your heart of hearts, not your human heart, your heart of hearts. Does it guarantee good? It is quite an experience to get there. What does it guarantee? I don't even think like that, so I don't know. What is good for you may not be what you think is good. And that's what I have found out. The things that are the best for most of us are not the things we treasure. So we just go along thinking that we can maybe get something better down the road. And it just doesn't work like that. It just doesn't work like that. Something for you to think about. Thank you for listening. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. Les and all of my listeners, please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.